Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello and welcome to this book club of the Lotus Eaters, in which we are going through the Cultural Revolution. I'm joined by Harry.
Hello there.
And this was great.
Yeah, it was a very good book. Just off the bat, initial review, let's just go straight into it. I thought it was a very good book, really got through all of the information in a really snappy way, very easily readable for myself. Don't know about you, given your impairments.
Hate reading, can read this.
Yes, so. Dick Otter writes in a very...
the illiterate gold star.
Yeah. Hey, even dyslexics can read it. That must be saying something, right? No, Dick Otter writes in a very easy to understand and digestible manner. He gets through the information without sticking on any point too long or just skirting over things. Like you were saying earlier, you kind of get the good breadth of information.
Yeah. Well, and he also goes into enough detail that you don't feel like you're just wasting your time learning that, oh, did you know China was communist? I was like...
Oh, wow, yeah. Really?
Yeah, no, there are actually a lot of information, which we're now going to go through for good fun, if nothing else, except that it's also horrific.
Yeah,
so I mean,
I
said that.
Don't necessarily take our cheery demeanor as indicative of the tone of the book. The book is grim, talks about very horrible subject matter, and very horrible things happening to horrible people, and just everyone being nasty to one another, to be perfectly honest.
But I must say, I mean, I did the previous one with Bo on Mao's Great Famine, and after going through that one, and then this one...
I'm sure this was a bit lighter.
Yeah, but you become very desensitized to the violence, so...
Yeah, I'm sure that's the case. I've not read Mao's Great Famine, so just as a heads up to anybody watching, I'm coming at it from the angle of having only read this one.
Anyway, we shall begin at the start. So the start of the book, chapter one, mainly focus on from the Great Famine. So he's writing as sort of if you've kind of read the Great Famine, although if you haven't, there's some bits in there of importance.
I know enough tangential details about the Great Famine to
stupid
pick
it policy. Up. Everyone went hungry, and then everyone went bye bye.
lots of people got punished for trying not to starve.
Yeah, if you want to go check that one out, of course, to go check out the previous book club I did on that. But quote here from just him talking about that: when a boy stole a handful of grain in Hunan village, local boss Sheng Chang forced his father to bury his son alive. The man died of grief a few days later.
Lovely.
Yeah, I mean, that's the tone and tenor of, like, the past few years. I can't remember how many years the Great Famine goes through, but that's your life. Like, all your living memory, frankly, of what you can remember of the past is probably about that at that point, going through that kind of horror. And then we enter into the Cultural Revolution.
Yes, the Chinese Communist Party had a real talent for one disaster after another, didn't they?
One-upmanship on the, in the hell. Yeah. So, I mean, we're not even going to go over, as I mentioned, the toddler corpse eating from the Great Famine, which was horrific. But Mao's cabinet decided to meet after all of that show, and they were somewhat denouncing him, saying that it had not all been successful. I love how this is a denounce. This is a denounce.
You know, it was 70-30.
Yeah, 7 points good, 30 points bad. It was three fingers, as they would say, which is apparently that's enough for a denunciation of Mao, which... Okay, I mean, this is the kind of levels of control a communist system has, of course. They also start mentioning that maybe some of this was man-made.
Yes, maybe the grain requisitions from the countryside had something to do with it.
Mm.
The forced collectivization.
Which man? Mao. Who else? And then, at the same time, Khrushchev takes control of the Soviet Union and begins de-Stalinization, getting rid of the old man's statues and names everywhere, and the cult of Stalin in the secret speech and all the rest of it. I'm sure most people will know.
Mao knew about the secret speech because it got sent, for whatever reason, they sent off copies of it to a lot of the communist countries, and they saw, like, and Mao just looks at it and goes, oh, this could happen to me.
Yeah, especially coming out of the famine. He's like, hang on, wait, no, someone's going to take over and then be like, hey, you caused a famine, bro. You're the bad guy.
And to be fair, there had already been what you could possibly call a sort of wave of Chinese de-Stalinization, with the fact that they'd taken all references to Mao and Mao Zedong thought out of the constitution in 56, I think it was, at one of the conference meetings.
So he's pretty worried about all this happening, and probably rightfully as well, that he might be denounced for being a bad man after killing like 50 million people in a famine. Not
might
to mention
be,
all the other stuff.
Might be on your mind.
Yeah. Anyway, so moving on from that, we go to chapter two, in which we have some quotes from Dakota describing the situation of the average person at this time. Quote, "People had not simply waited to starve to death. In a society in disintegration, they had resorted to every means available to survive. The very survival of an ordinary person came to depend on their ability to lie, charm, hide, steal, cheat, pilfer, forage, smuggle, trick, manipulate, or otherwise outwit the state." This I find very interesting because it sort of almost tells you, in a way, because we're about to read that everyone then convinces themselves that those people are a bunch of capitalists who undermine the country, and that's the reason the Great Leap Forward failed.
That's always the communist line, isn't it? If you disagree, you're a capitalist. It's not that our plans have just gone so terribly wrong.
But they convince themselves that the reason the whole thing failed and everyone died is not because of their stupid decisions, but instead because of all these people who are still alive at the end of it.
Oh, well, if you
they're the bad guys.
If you survived, though, you need to understand that must have meant that you had food. And if you had food, you're not being a good communist.
Because if you had food, as he says, you must have cheated, stealed, lied, pilfered, charmed, blah, blah, blah. There is no other way you're alive at this point.
And the only person it really matters to lie to or charm in this situation is the state. And you can never go against the state.
So they decide that that evidence of people still being alive is why socialism failed, which...
Socialism only works when everyone's dead.
Yes. So then they decide, well, it's time for a cultural revolution to try and counter all of these reactionaries, capitalist roaders, and blah, 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 blah. Insert insult there.
It will become apparent that it seems to have been a way for Mao to direct opposition against his potential political usurpers.
Yeah. So at this time as well, Brezhnev finally removes Khrushchev in the Soviet Union, and there is hope in the Chinese nation for better relations with the Soviet Union. And, that disappears very quickly after they send a delegation to Moscow. I don't know if you want to read this quote.
Yes, of course. "The highly inebriated Soviet defense minister staggered towards Marshal Heilong and said in the hearing of everyone present, 'We've already got rid of Khrushchev. You ought to follow our example and get rid of Mao Zedong. That way, we'll get on better.'"
And that was obviously relayed to Mao.
Yes, it's not going to help his paranoia.
No, nor did it help Soviet-Sino relations, the slightest. And, of course, was the cause of the Sino-Soviet split going forwards. If we go to the next chapter, there were genuinely, apparently, resistance slogans and anti-communist slogans and songs being sung throughout the country, which you kind of expect after the party killed 10% of the population.
Well, that's the thing. It would be very easy to say, oh, Mao was just paranoid about all of this. And to a certain extent, yes, he was. But there was a definite anti-communist sentiment, or at least anti-Maoist sentiment going around. I think there were a few songs going around where it was like they wanted it to be the Soviet today is our tomorrow, but they instead came up with the American today is our tomorrow, clearly indicating what they wanted.
But there was also just a situation in which, well, there were real enemies because, well, people had just been through hell, and quite frankly, they weren't too pleased about that. But there were also imagined enemies, so people who were still, after all of that hell, pleading that the Communist Party is the best party, there will be no new China without the Communist Party, blah, 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 blah. It was genuinely both the cases going on. You had the deluded people, as you still do in communist nations, and then the people who have seen reality.
Well, Mao had managed to build the cult of personality around himself and also managed to, I think Dakota in a different book points out that Mao, whenever he denounced his followers, never shot them like Stalin did. He forced them to sort of self-flagellate themselves.
He did do a lot of shooting as well.
Well, he did a lot of shooting, but for those in key positions, he sort of forced them into a position where they had to swear fealty to him.
Yes, in the highest, we see that a lot going forwards. So we shall begin with the fact that that's the situation for Mao. What does he do? Well, firstly, the party needs new figures to deify the dear party. So who do you pick? Well, one example they chose was Lei Fang, and the song was produced, Follow Lei Fang's Good Example. And we have an example here of Lei Fang, and we shall listen. Let's play.
Yeah.
ad nauseum.
Yes.
I mean, it does go on for quite some time. But also, he's not the only one. Funny thing about him, though.
Yeah.
We should mention, which is, we looked up, where the hell did he come from? Because it was mentioned in the book. But
yeah, I think they mentioned that he was a soldier who died, and they found a book, a diary of his, where in almost every single page was just saying, oh, I love Mao. Mao visited, literally there's a passage where he's like, Mao visited me in a dream.
Tucked me in at bed.
Yeah.
Left me cookies and milk. Yeah, obvious forgery. But the man himself, Lei Fang, was a real man. He was in the People's Army, in which, well, he didn't really have much of a choice, did he? And he died because he was backing up a truck, apparently. He was directing the truck, and the truck hit a lamppost, and the lamppost fell on him, and he died. And that was it.
So he died in a retarded way.
Yeah, like, really uninspiring.
I'm not really that surprised that the communists decided to deify someone dying stupidly.
I mean, it's you know
it's appropriate.
People died all sorts of ways, right? But it's just the fact of, like, this guy had no real achievements at all, had no real devotion to the party, other than he worked in the military like almost everyone else.
And maybe wrote some of this diary.
Yeah. And then
questionable.
He gets turned into like a hero, of course. Maybe it's actually the goal that you pick someone who died in such a mediocre way, because then you don't have to look too deeply into the past. Just cover it up. And he wasn't the only one. There were a lot more. Don't know if you want to read this quote here, in which...
Yes, Ouyang Hai appeared in 1963. He too had been an army hero who had let a diary revealing his devotion to the chairman, yet another incarnation of Lei Fang, turned up in November 1965, this one called Wang Ji. Wang, who also kept a diary, had thrown himself on a landmine, saving 12 bystanders. So if that's true, that one is an actual hero, you could say, perhaps worthy of...
not.
Probably not, though. In 1963, the slogan was Learn from Lei Feng. Now it became Learn from Wang Ji. Identical others were produced, identical articles were published, other young role models succeeded one another rapidly, including Mi Jindei, Wang Jinsu, Lei Yongjun. Apologies to John for the pronunciation there. But yeah, do you want me to keep going?
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. Helping old ladies at the railway station, as Lei Feng had done, was all well and good, but students were warned not to assist class enemies. The motto of the socialist education campaign, after all, was never forget class struggle. To instill class hatred in them, regular sessions of recalling bitterness were organized, where elderly workers and peasants came to tell the harsh and miserable days before liberation. So, sounds fun.
I mean, this is the response, which is to set up a bunch of just fake guys as party heroes, endlessly make crappy propaganda, but it's the only thing you can listen to.
Consistently, all of these people who died just happened to have diaries available, just deifying and going on about how much they loved Mao Zedong.
You don't? Why don't you?
I had left it in my other jacket, I'm sorry.
You better have a diary. There's a lot of for Mao in this book.
There really is.
But then also we have the start there, which is you make this propaganda campaign not just because we need to rebuild the credibility of the party, but also we're going to direct it at children, defenseless children, because we're about to start the Cultural Revolution, and we're going to use the children as the means to purify
the nation.
For
a very long time, the children have been the focus of socialists because they are easy to manipulate and very impressionable. Mm. And a lot of these children had been raised basically viewing Mao Zedong as the savior.
Some kind of human god. So also he decides then to make millions of copies of the Little Red Book, which are all his quotations, many of them benign, but whatever, just gives them to everyone. Sets up military summer camps for students to attend, in which you will now learn how to be an army man as well as a
good
student.
Socialist.
Yep. A passion for the military model went hand in hand with contempt for formal learning, Dakota writes. Mao decided to institute cheating.
Can I read this one?
Sure.
I really like this one. Mao said, I am in favor of publishing the questions in advance and letting the students study them and answer them with the aid of books. He struck an even more rebellious note when he suggested that there were benefits to cheating. If your answer is good and I copy it, then mine too should be counted as good. What are you doing, comrade? I'm cheating. For Mao!
But also, this practice, at least from what I've seen, because I watch some guys who have lived in China for a long time, like Winston and Lao Wai, was 86, I believe, who have spoken about this. And Winston has spoken about it because he used to train students in medicine at a university in China. And apparently, when it came to exams, you were left with all your books, and if you cheated, no one cared. Like, you were passing.
To be fair, it does fit in with, like, the socialist trends, though, doesn't it? It's kind of anti-critical thinking. You know what to say, just not why it is that you're saying it.
I suppose so. But it's also just, what a meme. Like, we don't need to know things. We will just cheat the things.
We will just find the one guy who does know things and copy him.
Copy paste.
For Mao.
Well, I suppose that's also survived the Maoist era. So we move on to chapter 4, in which Mao then decides to purge the mayor of Beijing for being part of an anti-party clique. Who knows if that's true?
Primarily because the mayor of Beijing was in his way.
Yeah. He had also apparently been delaying some of the insanity that Mao had been going through, and therefore he was guilty.
So he was a sane man, relatively speaking.
He then purges the cultural ministry for all being reactionaries. Of course they were. Communist Party cultural ministry, full of reactionaries, those guys.
I bet.
Yeah. And this is the stage which is set for the Red Years, as Dakota calls it. So we move to chapter 5. He then organized students to purge teachers who were anti-party. How you determine that?
I think some of the claims that were given was basically, I mean, everyone was so on eggshells around ideas of Mao that if it was like maybe they'd accidentally been putting a poster up of Mao and the corner had torn in a way the students didn't like, you're reactionary, you're anti-party.
Yeah, it could be as minor as you wanted, because a lot of this seems to have been, I just don't like him.
Well, yeah,
for make up something.
Obviously, you're giving students an excuse to punish teachers who'd been punishing them for not doing the schoolwork.
And this would start at the highest levels, like the principals, vice principals, and then would move to the teachers, who all ended up denouncing each other, and then the students denounced the teachers, and then the teachers went into overdrive and started like bringing up secrets that the students could have possibly have known about other teachers, about their sexual deeds or whatever, right? And it just gets worse and worse, and everyone's just slinging mud by the end of it. They then go on to bully, embarrass, and torture themselves and each other, pretty much. Quote here. He and others were forced to march around the campus barefoot, hitting broken gongs or pots, declaring their crime, quote, I am a black gang element. I believe that was the principal who was being, well, frankly, tortured there. Some of the accused had their hands, had their head shaved. Others were given so-called yin-yang haircuts, where only one half of the head was shorn.
Yeah, so they've just opened the gates for absolute pandemonium and barbarism from the kids. And this is the light stuff.
Yeah, this is how it starts out, which is like, haha, look, we can like bully the teachers and shave their heads. And then it gets to, what if we go further? And they did, of course. Moving to chapter 6, work teams have been sent to deal with counter-revolutionaries in the students, which there weren't any. This is again just made up. Mao then came out of hiding and endorsed the students who should purge the monsters within the country.
Well, yes, what happened, I think, that was described was that Lin Bao, I think, who was in charge of the army, sent in the army to try and calm all of this down.
Because students should not be harassing their teachers.
Yes, and then Mao comes out and goes, actually, if you're trying to prevent the student revolution, you're now a reactionary, and you have no recourse against the students who are just allowed to do everything.
Yeah. He even issues a dictate basically saying that anyone is suspect in the country being a reactionary, except himself, of course.
Yes, I think...
And the students.
Mm.
The students are exempt.
From any sort of authority. Police, army, military, anything. You couldn't do anything against the students. And he even, I think, threw out the slogan, to rebel is justified.
Yeah. The students then organized themselves into the Red Guards, as they called themselves, and immediately began beating teachers, setting them on fire, or whatever hell else they wanted to. I don't know if you want to read this one, because it's horrific.
Oh, if you want me to, all right. The first death occurred in a girls' school. Bian Zhongyun, the vice principal, the students had spat in her face, filled her mouth with soil, forced a dunce's cap on her head, tied her hands behind her, and then beaten her black and blue. They splashed them with ink, forced them to kneel, and hit them with nail-spiked clubs. Bian lost consciousness after several hours of torture. She was dumped in a garbage cart. At the Beijing Third Girls Middle School, the principal was beaten to death. The dean hanged herself. At another school near Beijing, the principal was ordered to stand under the hot sun while Red Guards poured boiling water over him. A biology teacher was knocked to the ground, beaten, and dragged by her legs through the front door and down the steps, her head bumping against the concrete. She died after being further tormented for several hours. Then the other teachers, rounded up as so many monsters and demons, were forced to take turns and beat her dead body. Some teachers were made to swallow nails and excrement. Others had their heads shaved and were forced to slap one another. Yes, pretty nasty stuff. Honestly,
Lord of the Flies territory.
It really is. It shocked me how quickly it descended into barbarism when it was just the students with grievances against the teachers. Because honestly, a lot of these grievances, I don't know, Dakota either have forgotten or doesn't specify, but I would imagine a lot of these grievances are the sorts of grievances that a lot of school children would have with their teachers, of, oh, they're being unkind to me, they didn't mark me fairly, and then it just descends from there. You just open the floodgates for this stuff. Yeah.
Wow. I also love that both of those were all girls' schools.
Yeah.
The first people to kill their teachers were all girls. Interesting. Hashtag boys will be boys. I can see a lot of people in the chat also referencing Evergreen College in the universe, in the United States.
Yes.
Which, of course, went down the same route for a short period.
If there was no threat of the authorities coming in, I wouldn't have been surprised if this sort of stuff were to explode over in America.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.